Good morning, Atlanta.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett.
And we're excited that you've tuned into BusinessRadioX.com this morning to join us. How you doing today, Dana?
I'm all right. I was at an independent bookstore last night for an author launch for two best-selling authors, New York Times best-selling authors, up in somewhere that felt like, I'm sorry for all you suburbanites, but it felt like the middle of nowhere to me. And I love the woman that owns the store. I've known her actually for some time, but I've never been to the store before. And I came out afterwards, and I was in the parking lot, and I said, if I didn't have my GPS, I'd be screwed. Because I walked out with one of my friends, who's actually another author, and she said, well, which way do you go to go home? And I said, I have no idea. I literally followed my GPS, and if it wasn't for that, I would be doomed.
Those suburbs can be very scary, especially at night, and you realize you're so turned around.
Well, and everything looks the same. It's like,
exactly.
Sorry, Atlanta, but
strip
it's like
mall
exactly.
After strip mall.
Took the words right out
which
of my mouth.
Which strip mall do you turn at?
Oh, my God. And it's the middle. I mean, I was up there, Canton Road and Marietta somewhere, like, or not Marietta, but like, I don't even know. Anyway, we have a guest in the studio this morning that we should probably stop ignoring.
Good morning, everyone.
We've got James Watson with us this morning, joining us here. James is the program manager for Atlanta's Village Capital program, which is a peer support network that allows entrepreneurs to find sources of funding. They've made seed investments in two companies recently, or how you've supported hundreds of different entrepreneurs.
That's correct. Yeah, we're about to make investments in two companies here in Atlanta. We've had a program that's been running for the last 10 weeks. We've got 15 fantastic companies in the cohort, and they're actually selecting who gets the money. So we don't have an expensive team of analysts.
Oh.
The companies themselves are actually picking who gets the money.
So they're like not picking themselves? Like, how does that work?
It's sort of like, yeah, they're not.
It's like a really cool competition.
So you're probably thinking right now this should be like a reality TV show.
It should be.
Like
it does sound a little bit like Survivor.
Sure, yeah. It actually turns out that they don't get super competitive.
Really?
The companies in our program, these are all social enterprise companies.
Oh, well, that explains it, because they're all really nice.
Well, okay, so these,
if you just had regular companies, they'd be like, forget it, I'm voting for myself.
That's quite possible, yeah.
This absolutely. Is a more altruistic bunch than the average capitalist.
Well, it's an experiment. We could try this experiment on just regular for-profit companies.
I would love to see you do that, just like fake them out. It won't even be real. You don't have to actually give them anything at the end, but just like see what would happen as a social experiment, you know?
It would be fascinating.
But absolutely. I didn't mean to interrupt your how-tos and why-nots. So explain, please.
No, not a problem. I was going to say first, actually, I hope you guys have set your microphones to slightly jet-lagged British accent, because I just got
now,
back
where
to
are
California.
You from originally, James?
I'm from Bristol in England.
Right.
Which is in the southwest.
My problem is I want to like completely not mock, but mimic your accent. Like, that's my complete inclination right now, is to start speaking in a ridiculously bad British accent. So it's going to be hard for me to control myself.
That's okay. Just so you know. Flattery is the greatest form of imitation.
That's right. That's
or
right.
The other way around, isn't it? Imitation is a greatest form of flattery.
Right there. Yeah.
Speaking of Britain, did you guys go to the Queen's Jubilee celebration
at
Oglethorpe here?
No,
in the
I
city.
Didn't. I was invited. I was in California, so I couldn't. My dad went to Buckingham Palace to go to the garden.
Oh, yeah?
Did he? The real thing? Wow. It was quite an amazing event to watch. I mean, for 4 hours watching the Queen's barge go down the river.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Okay, that says a lot about
I watched the time-lapse highlight.
Very good.
BBC News.
I mean, I was multitasking. I wasn't glued.
I was going
to
say, we need to get you out more, Elizabeth. Poor thing. So these companies, all right, so social enterprises,
yeah, exactly.
15 of them.
Yeah, so they're for-profit companies, but they're doing great things. They're doing good things. They're motivated to change the world, to improve the lives of people and the planet. So things beyond just making money. The sort of jargon is triple bottom line. So people...
Right.
Planet and
profit.
And profit as well. So
I used to work for one of those, so I know all about it.
Good stuff. So we believe that you can have sustainable solutions to the world's problems through for-profit models, not just non-profits and NGOs and governments doing things.
Right.
So our
it's fantastic. It's sustainable enterprises that make money that are self-sustaining but are also giving back in an active way to the community.
Exactly, exactly. So it started kind of under the umbrella of Grey Ghost Ventures, which is Bob Petillo's social enterprise investment fund based here in Atlanta. But
right.
they mainly invest in emerging markets all around the world. And his kind of idea was, you know, we've got these great companies and they're changing the world and we think this is a great way to do things. We also think we can make money doing this and we want to get other investors involved as well. So that's what they've set out to do, and it's actually been working really well so far. Village Capital is kind of a little experiment within Grey Ghost Ventures.
Okay.
Instead of hiring, you know, an expensive team of analysts to look over these companies and, it takes a long time to do that. And, a lot of the companies kind of fail because they're not getting the support while all that's happening. So just to get companies up and off the ground and to get some capital committed quickly, we set up this project called Village Capital. So we have this 10-week kind of an incubator/accelerator program, and instead of hiring like a team of analysts, university professors to teach it, we wanted to make it as efficient as possible. So we use the power of peer support. So the companies meet once a week, usually more than that, actually. But they go through their assignments from the previous week, which are going to be things that you should be doing to build a robust and strong business, and position yourself to scale and to receive investment. So they go through this program and they're meeting every week and they're talking with each other and they're throwing out ideas and they're like brainstorming and they're like criticizing each other, and just generally like
pretty intense
kind of teaming up. It's intense. Yeah. But they love it. Like we also have inspiring speakers who, heads of investment funds, super successful entrepreneurs. Like here in Atlanta, we had Arthur Blank as one of our speakers.
Right.
We had Bob Petillo, who runs Grey Ghost Ventures. We had Linton Hopkins, who just won the James Baird Award. He's a fantastic chef here in town. Go to Restaurant Eugene. There's a little plug. we have Michelle Nunn, who runs Points of Light. Amazing people.
So it's quite a privilege.
Sig Mosley. Sig Mosley
wow.
is the godfather of angel investing in Atlanta. He was there on Monday. He just started a new $25 million fund called Change the World. Change the World Fund.
How do you guys select who gets to go through this program? Because it sounds like something that any budding entrepreneur who thinks they've got a great idea would love to participate in. Is there a selection process?
They should. Absolutely. Good question. Yeah. I mean, if you've got an idea, if you're trying to change the world in a for-profit way, you should absolutely think about applying for our program. We're considering an Atlanta 2013 program. So this is how you would get in if we're going to do that. So the selection process, we have a long application form on our website. You go through that. Then there's an initial cut. If you make it past that, you're invited to go to a pitch fest, which is a ton of fun. And I should say, we're actually having a final pitch fest for our current program next Thursday. So if you're interested in meeting some of our companies and hearing about what they're doing, and you want to be in a room with full of investors and interesting people in the social enterprise world, come to Manuel's Tavern. That's next Thursday, 6:30 to 9:00.
Where is it? At Manuel's Tavern?
Yeah,
Manuel's Tavern.
You want to go?
We should
go.
Really, it'll be really fun.
I can walk over.
But next week is bad for me.
Anyway, that's Thursday evening. Come to that. But
it's a long story. But hold on 1 second. So where is all this other great programming happening? Like all these talks you're talking about? Like where are these people meeting and getting together? Do you have a regular place or is it moving around or how does that work?
Sure, absolutely. Well, let me finish what I was saying.
No, we don't allow that here on Good Morning Atlanta.
I keep getting sidetracked.
That's what we do. We try to confuse you.
It's okay. I also work with ADD students. So I know.
No, what are you trying to say?
I know what it's
Hold
like.
On.
So the selection process. So we have this big pitch fest. So we narrow it down to about 25 companies who will come and they'll pitch their ideas and they get a couple of minutes to pitch. And we actually hosted that at Manuel's Tavern again. And then there's a selection committee and a panel. And then the next day they will do group interviews. So they meet in small groups and they have an interview with two panelists. And then at the end of the day, we discuss for hours and we pick our companies. And that is really the most important job, I think, that we do is picking, is recruiting and picking the companies. Because if you have good companies in the cohort, then everything's going to take care of themselves.
So what are the criteria that you choose a good company? I mean, how does one...
That's another good question.
Amongst of so many good companies that are doing good.
Absolutely. We're picking people over products for the most part.
See, that's interesting.
The most important thing is this a good entrepreneur?
Most
do they have a good team?
Most people think it's the idea that's important. You know, I've got the greatest idea. I'm going to be a millionaire. I've got this great, you know,
entrepreneurial idea. Ideas are good, sure. I mean, that's definitely...
But you're saying it's the person is much more important.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Absolutely. Good people are going to come up with great ideas, whether they don't have one right now, and they're going to be able to... It's not just about the idea as well. It's about, like, entrepreneurship is about management. Right, so if you have a good team of people that are going to manage and build a company, they're going to be able to, you know, sell you paperclips or, you know, or anything really.
Right.
So, I mean, that is number one criteria. Do you have a solid team? Are there any holes in your skill set? Are you a good entrepreneur? Are you a good leader? Do you have good management skills? Will you be able to run a company? And it doesn't matter quite as much what you're doing. Obviously, good ideas help and matter, but number one is the team.
So there are a number of interesting ideas that these companies that have been through the current program have come up with. Are we allowed to talk about some of the work that some of the companies have done, James?
Sure. Absolutely.
There's one in agriculture, this local three. Wholesale food production from Georgia Farms.
Yeah, so we have companies in all sorts of sectors. I mean, we've got healthcare, education, local agriculture, sustainability, kind of sustainable logistics. Local three, they're a great team. So they're pretty early stage. I should say right now, our companies they're early stage companies. So they're startups. Most of them are very much past the idea stage. They already have a revenue stream. They already have a product out there. They've made some sales. A couple will be cash flow positive. Local three, they're just starting up.
Okay.
So they're kind of getting off the ground and looking for investment right now. But they take local food from local producers and they actually process it. So right now, you know, you can go to a farmer's market and you can buy some lettuce, you can buy some tomatoes, but you couldn't buy like a can of processed tomatoes.
Like fresh
from your local
farmer's
farms.
Market.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're like, I don't know, Emory University or something, you've got some, you know, local agricultural targets to meet, it's hard to do that with just buying
just fresh.
Bunches of fresh food and lettuce and stuff like that. So they're processing the food, which is fantastic.
Interesting. Now, another one that I saw was the ViaCycle. Did I say that right?
ViaCycle, yeah. ViaCycle, I can say they've been... So throughout the program, there are a number of trial ranks. So I told you, at the end of the program, two people are going to get investments from our fund, right? So that's purely based on the final rank. And I'll talk about what goes on to the... What that's kind of determined by, but throughout the program we'll have two or three trial ranks. So ViaCycle has actually come out on top on all of them. So they're front runners right now. They're not necessarily going to win, but they're front runners. So they are a mobile bike share technology company. So you know when you go to New York, well, New York soon you'll be able to do this, but if you go to DC or you go to London, you can go to one of these big stations and you can put your credit card number in and you get charged a dollar or something and you can rent a bike. And if you take it back to another station within 30 minutes or something, they don't charge you an extra dollar. which is great. If you're in a big city, they can, you know, they can put in dozens of these stations all over the center of town and people rent out these bikes. They've been fantastic. I've used it in London and in DC, in fact.
That's cool.
But if you're, let's say you're a university campus, you don't want to spend $40,000 per base station to install these things. That gets pretty expensive, particularly when your students, they just want to ride, you know, 30 seconds across across campus to go from buildings. It really isn't that far away. You don't want tons of these stations, you know, right next to each other. But you would love to have, you know, a bike share program. You know, it's sustainable. You know, students get around faster. You know, they get more exercise. It's great. So VearCycle has this technology. It kind of uses like a GPS tracking device and like a locking system that you can lock on regular bike racks. So you don't need these $40,000 base stations. And you can kind of log in and pay via your cell phone. So if you've got a smartphone, it's really easy. If you've got a regular phone, it's still pretty easy. You can send a text.
Fixed cost associated with the stations is substantially less, and you can get in and start to build the infrastructure for the
perfect
program.
Perfect for places like universities, like holiday resorts, you know, maybe even like, you know, corporate campuses.
That'd be fun. Would you rent a bike, Dana?
I would. I think I have not ridden a bike in so many years that I would be a little bit scared, but they say that it's like riding a bike, so I should be okay.
Exactly.
Right. I'm sure that you would be just fine with the riding aspect of it.
I would
do actually, it. Because I haven't ridden my bike in so long, and that's why I don't ride it, because I'm scared that when I go look at it, like, it's going to have a flat tire. And
right. So getting
it's
going
to require,
you know,
like, a lot of bike know-how to, like, fix it back up. So just renting, I would much rather just pull up and, you know, pay a couple bucks.
Yeah,
and well, get one that's good to go.
It's funny that you say that, because one of the reasons I haven't ridden a bike in so long is because up until about a year and a half ago, I lived out in the suburbs and it was very hilly, and I was sort of like out of shape, and I was like, yeah, you know what, I'd have to walk the bike up the hills to even forget it. Like, what is the point? And then now I moved into town, it's much flatter, and I would be open to riding a bike, but I live in a one room loft. And I don't really have any place to put it. Like, I'm not a hip 20-something that wants to have the bike hanging on my wall or whatever. Like, that's not my decor style. So
Jerry Seinfeld.
You look, yeah. You look pretty hip and 20-something,
thanks.
I'd say.
Oh, my new best friend. So, but, you know, so, but if there was one, a station right outside my door where I could just borrow one, sweet, you know? It's funny because I've been thinking Zipcar, obviously, same idea with cars. And I've been contemplating that too. But I think I drive too much to do that. Anyway. That's neither here nor there. So are there any other companies like that you want to kind of share some of what they're doing?
I mean, honestly, they're all absolutely fascinating to me. I can talk about some of the other ones. There's a company called Fog Dog. Fog stands for fats, oils, and greases.
Okay.
And they have this, it's incredibly unsexy what they do, but it's actually really, really useful and important. So they have, so when you go to, you know, a fast food restaurant and you've eaten your fries, there's all this like grease runoff
right. That
like clogs up drains.
Yeah.
And like costs like the city of Atlanta like millions of dollars
right.
to clean up.
Right.
Like, you know, we have like this sewage problem here.
But you're not supposed to put that down the drain.
Yeah, they have this
right?
special grease trap.
Exactly. So they have this special, they have this grease trap, right?
Right.
Which is based on like 120-year-old technology.
Of course it is.
All right. And these things, like, they work for the most part, but like, a lot of the time they'll like spill over and, you know, they'll like malfunction and things will clog up, and then they'll be like, it gets into the sewage system.
Sure.
Which is not good for anyone. It's not good for Atlanta, it's not good for the environment, you know, it gets into the water supply. So Fog Dog, they have this device that like you put in and it's like taking the grease trap into like the 21st century. So they like, they've got this device, it goes in the grease trap, they monitor in real time like the levels, and they can tell you exactly like the type of material that's in there, and if there are any like build-ups about to happen, they can tell you what's going to happen, if there's going to be like a blockage and some spillover before it happens. So
I would love to talk to them about what inspired them to come up with that. You know what I mean? 'Cause that, I can't imagine like laying around on a Sunday morning being like, you know what? I have a great idea. Like the bikes, yeah. I could see like, oh, I have a great idea. I'm going to get bikes. I'm going to, you know, but that one you had to have some, they must have had some background.
I can't remember what the backstory was.
They had to have some background in chemistry or food service or something that made them get inspired by that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
What do you find?
Well, come to Mammal's Tavern next week and you can ask them.
Right. Ask them.
Yeah.
Is there, I mean, what do you find is the inspiration behind a lot of these entrepreneurs, James, when they've come up with some kind of an idea? Is there?
Sure. I mean, some of them, you know, they'll have like a background in that industry or education. You know, we have some entrepreneurs that are kind of coming right out of university and they've come up with ideas. I think for the most part, they're inspired by some problem that they just saw, they thought of in their day to day lives, and they wanted to come up with a solution. You know, like everyone in our cohort and everyone that's doing Village Capital around the world is addressing a problem. They're addressing some kind of critical need that they've seen. You know, and in other countries like, you know, India and Brazil and things like that, a lot of these needs are very, very critical needs. They're like changing people's lives, like day to day. There's some fascinating companies we have around the world. We could talk about that later if you want.
So I have a question just about social enterprise to begin with. Do you feel like there are certain types of businesses that lend themselves more to that model, or is it could that work for any kind of business in any industry?
Well, we're kind of getting into the definition of what is a social enterprise.
Of course.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, what do you guys think a social enterprise is? Right,
well,
now?
I mean, I worked for one for a couple of years.
Okay, what did they do?
Well, I don't want to say exactly what they did because then I'll be saying who they are, basically, because I think they're the only ones doing what they do.
Okay, that's fine.
We'll talk offline. But, and I mean, they were a B Corp, so there was that aspect of it, which for people who don't know is sort of another, it's like a certification process to sort of get approved to be a company that's good, is the easiest way to say that, that's doing good. Giving back. And so, you know, what they were doing was giving a percentage of profit basically back to a specific type of charity that related to their business model. I'm being so vague right now, but but stay with me. So I mean, I think to me, that's the general idea. So either the business itself is improving the world, like the grease trap thing, which is going to save the city money on top, you know, but also there are businesses like that where the actual product has nothing to do with quote unquote doing good, but the model is about doing good.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, there are definitely kind of two kinds of social enterprise, and the more obvious one is your company is like specifically addressing some kind of problem that's changing the world and changing people's lives.
Yeah, you're bringing water to third world countries or something like that. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And we do have a company in our cohort that actually does kind of bring water to disaster relief areas.
Yeah, there are all kinds of like that bottle thing where you roll the bottle, you know, where they, I don't know, I forget the details of it now, but it's making it really easy to transport water in countries where they don't have that infrastructure and things like that. So those are more obvious.
Yeah.
And then
there are other companies, and like to me, they're sort of on the periphery of being a social enterprise. That's not what comes to mind initially. Like a company like Tom's, you know, like a fantastic company and they're doing great things, but they're giving money to charities rather than what their core is. It's not necessarily a social enterprise.
Okay, so that's a perfect example because the company I worked for definitely was more in the Tom's model. Yeah. And so that's not in your mind like a real sort of a different kind of
not
thing.
Not so much, no, and that's not most of the companies we work with are very much in the former category.
Okay, so in that case their primary business is what they're actually producing or doing or whatever is making the world a better place.
Exactly.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. And many of them will go on to become B Corps.
Yeah.
You know, as well, get registered.
Do you feel like that? I'm just putting you on a right out there now. Do you feel like B Corp is a valuable thing? Is that taking off? Do people know what it is? Is it?
Definitely. I don't know if people know what it is, but
but that's half the battle, right? Because, I mean, for example, everybody knows what the Better Business Bureau is. And so, like, if you have complaints with the Better Business Bureau, you better be careful because people know what that is. And if you have their seal of approval on your website or on your materials, then people respect that. But I think B Corp right now, still, if you see that on somebody's, you know, materials, you don't really necessarily know what it is. So if they're not getting the message out, then it becomes less valuable.
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's all marketing, right? At the end of the day.
Absolutely.
It's all about the show.
Well, it's very good to hear that there's a lot of these enterprising organizations here in Atlanta. It's been a little bit of a tough business week. A lot of our big blue chip companies here in the city took a hit on the stock market.
I saw that. Yeah. Luckily, I don't have any investments.
The upside of not even bothering to play the market.
Yeah, when you're a poor radio host, like, you know, it's all fun and games.
But so that's why we wanted to focus this show on all the good entrepreneurial types of activities that are going on in the city. And a couple of cool expansion pieces of news. I saw that this Five Below store. Have you ever been to this Five Below store?
No, but it is from
Philadelphia.
I know, where we're
That's
both
why
from.
I wanted to ask you.
No,
I have not because it focuses on tweens.
Yes, teens and tweens.
Which I think I was out of that stage before that word was invented.
Me too. Me too.
Thankfully.
But it's what it is five and below is items are all $5 or less. So it's like the old dollar store, except I guess they can't really do that anymore because it's just, what can you really buy for a dollar anymore? But so now there's things for up to $5 in this store, but they say it's mostly like things that tweens and teens will like, cosmetics and makeup, electronics and things like that. Although I don't know what electronic you're going to buy for $5.
No.
Just saying. like an Atari or something from 1979, possibly for $5. No, that would be an antique now. You'd pay a lot for that, probably.
Sure.
Right. Now,
yeah.
At the $500 store.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah, well, they're going to be all over the place.
Yeah, it's going to be a new...
seven new stores on June 1st. Which a lot of locations.
Right. For jobs.
New outlet.
We like that.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And it is always good when something new comes to town, especially when everything is down. Like you mentioned all the stock being down and housing prices. They just came out with a new report. Housing prices are down 5.3% or something like that.
Which is tough to hear, right, as the summer selling season approaches.
Well,
the
thing
real
is,
estate market's
you know,
supposed to heat up.
It's always a blessing and a curse because for buyers, it's great news. For sellers, sucks.
Sure.
You know, but for buyers are like, all right, sweet, I can go get a steal, you know.
Right. Yep, you've got to focus on the opportunity, certainly.
Right. So if you're in a position to do it, if your stocks didn't just all tank, you could actually go buy an additional property and hold on to it if you're that kind of investor, if you're
Absolutely.
Willing
it's
to
an,
hold
it's
on
an
to
opportunity.
It. Yeah, for sure. But only if you have the means to take advantage of it, you know. I was standing around the lobby of my building and this guy came in and apparently he comes in there. You got to love government, but apparently he comes in there once a week or something to take pictures of a unit that's being foreclosed on, or that is a foreclosure, I guess, that HUD is responsible for
right.
now. And they have to take pictures every week to of the front
sure
of the building and the unit inside and out to make sure it hasn't changed. Like, so you see exactly how it, which is kind of interesting to know if you're looking at buying a foreclosure, that you're seeing pictures that are less than a week old, no matter what. But this is the government is paying this guy to take pictures of the same place every week. But I had a chat with him because that was my British slang command. I had a chat with him. And he was telling me all about their company, and they specialize in foreclosures. That is what they do. And they in the Atlanta metro area, and they have, well, they stretch way beyond the metro area, but they have stuff, you know, kind of expanding out from here. And he was sort of saying they have every price range of home from the millions down to like $1,000. Like, you can actually buy a property for $1,000. He's like, we don't recommend it.
I would like to see what you can get for a grand.
Comes with like 10 years of back taxes. Though.
Well, he said for $1,000, you better be prepared to just bulldoze whatever's there and start over, because there's nothing to it. It's whatever it is worthless, basically. So they're just trying to, they have land. It's some land that they're probably in like some ridiculously remote county way further out than I was last night, you know, where nobody really wants to live except maybe a cow.
GPS can't even
right.
figure out where
right. like
you
if
are
I,
at that point.
Right. It would be like a bad horror movie if I tried to go to a place like that. Anyway, so it is nice to see when there are, you know, new stores coming to town, when there are social enterprises, you know, kind of vying for capital that's actually available to them in town. You know, it's all, we want to look at that positive stuff too.
Apparently there's also going to be a lot of job growth coming to the Forest Park area.
Oh yeah.
Which is one of Atlanta's most economically depressed communities. So it's a really important thing to see. They are a little vague. Which you got to respect when people need to be vague. But they're saying, the executive director of Forest Park is saying as many as 500 to 1,000 jobs.
Wow.
And it looks like it might hinge a little bit on the airport.
I was gonna say,
going
to say,
on there.
I was about to say, isn't Forest Park near the airport? I think it is, right?
Forest Park is a great place to grab a beer before, if you are early to the airport.
Wait,
they just opened a new terminal.
Cool pubs
at the
down there.
Yes,
there's
they
actually
did.
A good English pub in that area.
In Forest Park.
Oh, really?
Yes, they did open a new international terminal. Have you tried it yet?
I haven't tried it yet, but I can't wait because it's so confusing. Usually when you come in international into Atlanta, you have to recheck your bags.
Yeah.
It completely freaked out my dad the first time he came. He thought he was being routed onto another flight.
It does seem like a scam, or like either they're taking my luggage or, yeah, they're trying to
put me in the wrong place. I think he had an argument
with
someone and
then he got
sent home before it even arrived.
It is so funny. It's so whatever you get used to seems normal because,
sure.
you know, I pretty much always fly in and out of Atlanta now and I'm sort of used to the way things are. But I have to say, 20 plus years ago when I first came to Atlanta on a flight, I was, you know, living in the Northeast. And we did not have trains in our airports that took you from one place to another. The only trains took you into the city. So I got here and I went downstairs, you know, down the escalator to the, whatever they call it, the transportation mall or whatever they freaking call it. And I was like, what is this train? I was like 20 years old or something. And I was standing there like so confused.
Where is it going to take me?
And I was randomly standing there with these two radio DJs from Rochester, New York, who were probably in their late 30s or something at the time. So they were obviously more experienced travelers than me, but they were in the same boat. They didn't know what it was either. So we're the three of us are standing there like, do we get on this? Is this going to take us to the city? Like, we were so confused. And now, of course, it's just all the airports have it, really. We're not all, but a lot. And it's very commonplace. So I'm sure, you know, you get used to whatever you get used to. That said, this new international terminal should be lovely and convenient, hopefully. Though,
I'm excited.
The thing that we talked about this on the air last week, I think, but the thing that confuses me is that you get off at a different exit off the highway to go to it, which I think is really weird. Like, I feel like I will mess that up inevitably the first time I do it.
A lot of people are going to miss flights.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, you're driving down that. You're so used
probably
to getting
myself
off.
Included.
Yeah, like you're so used to going where you go. And then you walk into the main terminal. And they're like, oh, no, you got to go out, remove your car and go back. Go on 75. And what? Like, huh? What airport has two highway exits? So weird. You got to love Atlanta. It's always something weird going on.
We're booming. It's an exciting time.
It is.
You have to be flexible to the change because, I mean,
and the older
this
we get,
kind of expansion, there are going to be a lot of big changes that happen.
Yeah. You know, speaking of sustainability and stuff like that, a lot of times people immediately go to greenness when they think of sustainability. Is that where you go in your, when they think of sustainable businesses and social enterprise and all of that? Is it?
I think it depends on the context. I mean, sustainable can be just be keeping something going
sure.
for a long time. You know?
Right. That's certainly what the word means. But I think people automatically go to.
I think I've started to not just think of green.
You expanded your mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the reasons it popped into my head is just because when you talk about companies are trying to, you know, reduce carbon emissions and things like that to be more green, but then they fly all over the world, and how much. You know, how bad is that for the environment, whatever. So I don't know. I always wonder about that because I don't see that changing. People need to get where they need to get to, right? You're not going to start taking a boat.
Well, but you don't have to necessarily go everywhere you're doing business these days.
Right.
There are a lot of ways to virtually
be
there.
I use Skype a lot.
Yeah.
You can Skype people and you can get a meeting done without having to be in the
totally.
Same place.
Well, and there's also, it's interesting because the company I worked for that remains unnamed is they had, you know, they were all about, you know, reducing carbon emissions and whatever officially, yet they had multiple locations and it was completely unnecessary for the size of the business. Like, it was just because the CEO lived in one city and wanted to be there and the original owners lived someplace else. And so the factory was there and that kind of thing. But so they were flying all over the country for no real good reason because they didn't want to move. You know,
we have very good reasons to be in India when we need to be in India because the companies are in India and the problems are in India.
Right. Plus, I like traveling just generally. Just saying.
It expands your, it opens your mind.
Yeah.
It's so good for you, I think.
Last week we had on our 200 Peachtree show, which is at 2 o'clock in the afternoons on Wednesday, we had a guest in who is doing a nonprofit to help children that are sort of underprivileged get the opportunity to travel abroad. And
that's brilliant.
That's basically what she was saying. Like,
kind of like the Ron Clark Academy.
Yeah, like, yes, exactly. It's like how much different you feel as a kid getting to get out of your little world and see other cultures. And, you know, it gives you so much hope, I think, about what you can do with your life. And it's huge.
Absolutely. I just found myself. I was in Atlanta for maybe 8 or 9 months solid. And I was working two jobs. I was getting absolutely exhausted. And I realized I just completely lost my mojo.
Aww.
Because I'd just been in the same place for too long, and I kind of lost perspective. And you know, I was away last week, and
so California refreshed.
California, I came back a new man. It was brilliant.
You had some alfalfa sprouts and some guacamole and whatever, and came back.
Yeah,
a little beach time.
We have a program out there at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. Uh-huh. It's called Frontier Market Scouts, and it is really cool. Actually, if you're listening, you're out there, and you're thinking of a career change, you kind of want to get into the social impact space. This is an awesome program for you guys. So you're based at Monterey Institute. You have training for 2 or 3 weeks. You kind of go through like an entrepreneurship class and training to be sent out to usually emerging markets. And you are essentially a village capital program developer. So you're like our man and women on the ground, as it were. So you're like, you're the first port of call, you know, in terms of like recruiting companies. You're kind of mapping the entrepreneurial ecosystem there. setting up partnerships with, you know, shared workspaces, kind of like the hub, like where we operate out of in Atlanta, you know, and making sort of calls to get some funding. And it's a really cool opportunity. And some of the interns are placed with companies from existing Village Capital programs, so they get opportunities to work with startups that are doing great things.
So they can kind of shadow somebody who's already got an existing market up. And then, I mean, how do you decide what cities to put programs in?
We have a fantastic cohort of students. I mean, with, you know, language skills, with, you know, already having experience in emerging markets. So let's say, you know, someone applies to the program and they've got, you know, they're fluent in Portuguese and they've got good contacts in Rio. They will go down to Rio and they will kind of, you know, leverage those contacts, and they will, they'll be there for, you know, between 2 and 6 months. And they're kind of, in a way that they're on their own. You know, they are like, there are men and women on the ground. They're getting things up and running. They're actually building and creating something. So it's a unique opportunity.
What kind of people end up gravitating to that kind of opportunity? Are they people that have started other businesses in the past, or
There's some entrepreneurs.
More like a social worker bent, or
it's mainly grad students, actually. People doing MBAs, they can get college credit for doing this, and people that are looking to get into you know, finance, and particularly in the social impact space, and then occasionally people that are, you know, that have been working in, you know, consulting, and, you know, or with startups before, and just kind of looking for a career change, and kind of get inspired by companies that are doing good things.
Very cool. I'm sure that working with these types of companies gives you lots of ideas, just being around all of that energy. Have you ever thought about starting an enterprise?
Sure. I mean, I was kind of joking the other day. I mean, there are 15 companies in our cohort, but there's a secret 16th participant, which is Village Capital themselves. So I feel like I've been going
get
through the program.
Get to participate.
It's been
and
amazing.
Learn too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm definitely tempted to start something up. You know, I'm not going to share all of my ideas.
No, don't give anything away.
Everybody is all secretive and cagey this morning.
What's your background before you got into this? What were
you
doing?
My background is in education. So I've been teaching at a small private high school in town. And I run a music program there. And I, you know, run a business studies and entrepreneurship program. And I've been teaching math and economics. I just took the CFA exams, Chartered Financial Analyst exams.
So numbers, you're a numbers guy.
I'm kind of I guess I'm a numbers guy.
It's like my subjects that I was the worst in school. Yep. Terrible.
I don't know why you guys got me on the radio. Talking is definitely not my strong point.
Well, you get
point.
The British accent. So really, like I said, we could just give you like a dictionary and let you just go, and it'd be great. It'd be great listening for all American women. I'm just putting it out there. Just saying. Not that we would take advantage of you like that. But does anyone have a dictionary?
Sure.
Just kidding.
It's a good time to have me. I mean, it's the, you know, it's the Diamond Jubilee, and
that's true. We have a little representative.
The Brits are on everyone's mind right now.
That's right. So teaching is that something that you want to stay with? Is that something you want to make use of? Do you want to do less, more? Where will that fit in as you move on?
Good question. I'm just trying to figure that out right now.
Okay.
Actually, yeah. So
no pressure.
I have had a great time working with Village Capital, and you know, I love what I do here, and we've got an amazing company. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story. So when I first heard about Village Capital, and I thought Village Capital, because in Britain, if you use village as an adverb, it's kind of like an insult. You're sort of
like the village
like
idiot.
The village idiot.
Like, no, we're like the village idiot or the village cricket team. It's like a certain sort of sector of the British population. If you use that, people will understand. Yeah, that was like the village cricket team was like the totally amateurish cricket team.
Okay, gotcha.
Full of the village idiots that chucking the ball and have no idea what they're doing. So I was like, why did you call it Village Capital? That's terrible.
It doesn't translate to the UK, I guess.
Doesn't quite translate to the UK, but there's absolutely nothing village about what we do. So
that's awesome.
So I've kind of lost that now in my mind.
Well, I should hope so. It'd be hard to work for them. Like, hand your people your business card and sort of look away. I work for Village Capital.
Sure.
I know, it's embarrassing.
Yeah. So I'll be working with Village Capital more next year, and I'm still running the music program. So I'm kind of got my foot in a couple of doors.
So you're actually kind of both sides of the brain, because the music side, although music and numbers, they do say go hand in hand.
They really do.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
But do you
I was
play?
In a jazz band at university with like five mathematicians.
Yeah, yeah. I think
and they
that's
were all
actually,
brilliant.
Yeah, more common than people realize. So would you play? What do you play?
I play jazz piano and guitar and drums.
You didn't
and
bring
bass.
A guitar in to play anything for us?
Yeah, that would have been fun.
That would have been awesome.
Next time.
I know. Well, this is a business show, so I guess I should behave myself. But I haven't had enough coffee yet, so I'm not feeling too well behaved.
Right, and we should talk a little bit more business. A couple other things I wanted to touch on in terms of news were North Highland Consulting Company, which is headquartered here in Atlanta, just opened a new office in Boston.
Ooh.
You know, you're such a Boston fan these days.
I am.
So this is actually their 21st U.S. market city that they're in. Isn't that fantastic? I mean, talking about, you know, is it worth it to be in your market physically,
right?
And clearly in some types of businesses
it's absolutely
important to make that investment and to have a local team of people, especially their model being minimizing the travel of their consultants.
I mean, one key message I think I've got from our, you know, really successful entrepreneurs and kind of heads of funds and organizations was that relationships are so important
right.
in business, whatever you're doing.
Yeah,
like relationships are absolutely key.
Well, I mean, it goes to what you said initially, is that how you select, you know,
the
candidates
people.
For these programs
sure.
is the people. And in,
sure.
as much as you can Skype and do things on the phone, it's kind of critical to build that relationship first. And the best way to do that is face-to-face. Once you know somebody, sure, you can Skype and you can do whatever needs to get done. But initially, building a relationship, you know, in a lot full day meetings, face to face, over a meal, whatever. Those are the ways that you do
and
that.
That's why our model works really well, actually, in terms of allocating capital. Because you have a group of people that are together for 10 weeks. They've got tons and tons of events and tons of time to spend and really get to know each other and get to know each other's businesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, so at the end of the program, you have people that they know who is like a really solid entrepreneur and who has a scalable idea and who has some impact and, you know, who's going to be able to return capital to the investor. They know that. Like it's not necessarily better than a team of analysts, but it's really, really cheap. And you also get people in kind of coming into the position where they're going to receive capital that wouldn't otherwise. For example, women are like 300% more likely to receive funding through our program than other traditional models.
Interesting.
That's
because the
opposite of what
women make
amazing in the VC
exactly,
and
totally.
Angel world.
And women make amazing entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But they under-promise and then over-deliver.
Right. That's how we are in life in general, I think.
Exactly. So the traditional model of, like, you know, getting funded is it's all pretty cutthroat.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it is just who's kind of pushing the hardest.
Overpromising a lot of times is part of
exactly. No, I mean, I'm full
almost,
of it.
I mean, the investors practically expect that.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
why they're always coming back with, you know, more due diligence questions and trying to cut down your argument, because they expect that as the entrepreneur, you're probably boasting slightly
exactly.
above what you can guarantee. Can deliver. It's how
totally.
You play the game at that point.
Yeah. So we've had some amazing entrepreneurs, you know, get funded through our program that wouldn't necessarily have got funded.
So I know you want to talk more about the headlines, but we didn't ever really, I don't think, unless I zoned out for a minute, which is possible, explain how that final pick happens, because you said
sure.
the actual companies choose the two that are going to get the money.
Sure, absolutely. So it's all
right.
The key is it's completely transparent. All right. So Pete, and you can't vote for yourself. And if you've been voting like low for someone who's clearly like got an awesome company and a fantastic team, you're going to get called out on it, you know. And because they spend so much time together, they become friends.
So
they're colleagues.
Is it a scoring type of
thing? Here's how it works. So there's a scoring thing out of 30, and there are like six categories, which is also kind of how we pick you know the cohort in the first place. So the first one is, like I talked about, entrepreneur and team, 1 through 5. Second one is product, like what problem are you addressing? You know, is this a decent product? Is it a good idea? Do we like it? Next one is your customer and distribution. You know, are people actually going to want to buy what you have? Are you going to be able to get that out to them? What's your distribution strategy? The next one is profitability and financials. Is the company actually going to make some money? You know, how long is it going to take you to be cash flow positive? You
so
know,
it's not just are you going to make money, but how soon are you going to make money, and how much money is there to be made? I mean,
sure.
is that part of
sure.
that financial?
I mean, as
picture?
Far as we're concerned, you know, the more the better. Like
right.
every company that's in our cohort, you know, has an impact, right? Like that's already kind of crossed the threshold, you know.
They wouldn't have gone to this point if
they wouldn't necessarily have applied even per se, because I mean that's who is specifically targeting.
If part of their mission wasn't that
exactly.
good stuff was going to trickle out to society
exactly.
upon the company.
Exactly.
Success.
So that was, what was that one? That was the fourth one. Next one, scale and impact. You know, do they have a big impact? You know, and can they take that to scale? Can they, you know, affect, you know, multiples of people? If you've got one golden egg, can you turn it into 100 golden eggs? Can you turn it into 1,000 or 1,000,000 golden eggs? Are you able to do that? And then the last one is the return of capital. Are we going to get our money back? And the beauty about Village Capital is we're a non-profit. So if we make an investment in a company, you know, and they turn around in 3 or 4 years and get acquired by Facebook for $1 billion, we got $1 billion that we have to put back into other companies that are changing the world all around
good.
The world.
But now, how come you guys are not a social enterprise?
How come Village Capital?
Correct.
I mean, we are, I guess.
Well, but
I mean,
you're a non-profit, so is
that... Oh, true. Good point.
So how come you're not a for-profit social enterprise? Just curious.
Because we need money. We need to take other people's money for free to be able to invest in these companies.
Okay, good answer. Sorry to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
Well, there is a difference. I mean, people do need to understand that. There is a difference between a non-profit
absolutely.
And a for-profit
sure.
social enterprise.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, I mean,
for the economy to function well, they should all be kind of intertwined. And because for-profit companies see the value of working with nonprofits and
absolutely.
Social enterprise, so there's definitely a place for each.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, I mean, in our case, there's a very obvious sort of positive externality on what we do. So, like, cities love to fund what we're doing, like private foundations that are interested in, you know, the future of their city and their area, love to fund what we do, you know, and the value that we create is much greater than what the companies are, you know, are paying or willing to pay to enter our program.
Now, James, the two enterprises get $50,000.
$50,000. That's
wow.
correct. Yeah,
each?
It's a convertible note investment each. Yeah.
So this is not chump change that we're
it's
talking
not chump
about.
Change.
This is,
I mean,
you know, substantial.
It's not millions, but
it's not millions. I mean, you know, a lot of those companies will also go on to receive, you know, additional funding.
But
$50,000, I mean, I have to say, I have been an entrepreneur.
But it gets the ball rolling.
Yeah, no, I've been an entrepreneur multiple times. And one of the times, one of the businesses I owned, I got a loan for, you know, from a women's organization that was supporting small business or whatever. And it was
great.
A really good interest, low, you know, loan to kind of help small business. It doesn't exist anymore, the organization that gave me the money. But it was like $8,000. And that was huge for me. Like, that actually gave me a lot of money. It was a retail business, so it gave me a lot of money to get inventory, and it was really helpful. So 50 is, like, amazing.
Sure.
You know, even though it sounds like, okay, it's not millions, it's not going to turn you immediately into Facebook, but it's a huge
It gets
start.
The ball rolling. And, I mean,
huge.
Like, part of what we do through the program is we connect the entrepreneurs to other sources of funding. So we have a big network. We have tons of exposure for the entrepreneurs, you know, pitch fests like this one that Man was saying. We had a midterm pitch fest as well. We had a big conference at Emory with lots of opportunities to kind of, you know, get the entrepreneurs exposed to potential funding sources.
And ostensibly, once they get the $50,000, you're invested in them, so to speak. So you're sticking with them and you're helping them continue on and all of that.
Absolutely. I would say, though, I think our program is more about the 15 rather than the two. Like, we're not an investment company. We're an incubator, accelerator program.
Sure.
So we care about
right.
all of them. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to keep a slightly closer eye on the two that receive investment.
Right.
but we care about all the companies and, you know, want them to be successful.
Yeah. Very cool. So you mentioned the hub. Do a lot of the companies work out of the hub?
Yes, actually, part of the... It's a great deal, our program. Honestly, if I was an entrepreneur, I would definitely sign up for Village Capital. They actually get, for the duration of the program, they get workspace at the hub.
Yeah.
So for people
who don't know, the Hub Atlanta, it's an international organization, but it's in Atlanta. And they all are. It's a co-working space specifically for social enterprise, and they
exactly.
have programs and, you know, access to investors and programs like yours and all of that are sort of going on there all the time. So it's a really good place to sort of interact with other people in
absolutely,
that space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, you're out there and you're working from home, or you're thinking about renting an office, I would totally recommend checking out one of the shared workspaces that we have in Atlanta. There's many of them. I mean, if you're a social enterprise, if you're doing, you know, you're affecting positive change, absolutely go check out the Hub.
Right.
You know, but there are other shared workspaces as well, like Strongbox West,
downtown,
and Locust 51.
200 Peachtree, right here.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. No, but it's brilliant. I mean, you're in a space. You've got, you know, all the facilities you need from a regular office, you know, printing, Wi-Fi, what have you. But you're there among other entrepreneurs that are right. kind of at the same stage as you. So,
yeah.
you know, if you've got people to talk to, there are people that work at these places that run little accelerator programs themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's really easy to get access to, like, cheap or free, like, legal, accounting, you know, technical advice.
And people, you get to know people in those environments that even when you've moved out of there, that you sort of stay in contact with or you run into, and they truly care about what you're doing and want to share what they're doing. And
exactly.
it's really
like
positive.
We said, everything is so based upon relationships.
Oh, totally. You know? Yeah. Anyway, any other big headlines we need to hit, or are we, did we catch up on? I don't know. It's relatively.
I think we've gone through most of it. There was a big acquisition by Ebix of PlanetSoft for $40 million, which is an India-based software company. So in terms of international expansion, here we've got an Atlanta company doing a big acquisition of an India firm to allow them to tap into all the benefits of being able to do business over there and bring that back to their customer base here in the States. So that's exciting to see.
Yeah. A couple other headlines that, you know, if people want to go look them up, we don't really have time to get into the stories, but apparently Georgia Pacific did some layoffs in Alabama. Unclear that that's going to affect Georgia, but it is a Georgia company. So worth mentioning. And in the slanderous gossipy world, the Weather Channel, did you see the thing about the Weather Channel anchor who is suing for apparently getting fired from military duty? That's her story anyway, so we'll see what happens with that. But Google it, you know, if you have time and you want to check it out. But, you know, Weather Channel, another big Atlanta business. You can't miss that building if you're driving up 75.
Yep.
Or you want to know what the weather is. Either way.
Yeah.
So is that about all we have time
Sweet
for, my
Auburn
friend?
Is also now on the endangered list in terms of historic places. America's 11 most endangered historic places.
Aww.
So they've been added to that registrar for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. I think it's a good thing because when they identify that these areas are so important to the historic climate of a city like Atlanta, and that Sweet Auburn district, I mean, is such an important place here for the city that
yeah.
then a lot more attention gets paid to making sure that that history doesn't get lost behind.
So it's kind of sad that it got to that place, but maybe positive that it's been recognized.
Hopefully it can be a pivot point from which to increase the vitality of that particular district here in downtown.
Always a good thing. We like that.
So up next, we have Southern Hospitality, and we are going to be joined by restaurant owners and chef Jeff Safari and Trimi Dotti of Thrive, and they're going to tell us all about what's on the menu at Thrive. I've been dying to try this place, so I'm thrilled to get to know them, and we hope you'll stay tuned for Southern Hospitality. But for now, I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett.
And we hope you all have had a great morning. We're moving on to a great mid-morning, and we will talk to you next week.
And thanks also to James for being with us.
Actually, we didn't even
thanks,
give James contact information.
Let's do that before we run out of time.
I can't believe I almost wrapped up without doing that.
Yeah,
James,
what do you want, cell phone number?
Obviously, people can Google Village Capital. But what's the website where they can go to
the
find
website
out more about the
website is www.villcap.com.
Villcap.com.
Yeah,
excellent.
Absolutely. And come check us out at Mammo's Tavern on
Do
next,
they have
next
to register
Thursday
for the Thursday event?
Yes, there's an Eventbrite. So if you go to Eventbrite's website and type in Village Capital, you'll find us
Get
there.
Get a ticket. All right.
Excellent.
I will see you there, James. And thanks so much Brilliant. For coming by
no, it's
today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks
for
having
me. On the morning
me.
Show and telling us all about all the great stuff you're doing at Village Capital.
That's wonderful.
Awesome.
All right.
Exciting
good morning,
times.
Atlanta.
We'll see you next week.